You're listening to The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heidmark at RadioArian.com.
This is your host of The Daily Traditionalist, Matthew Heimbach, and I'm glad to be here to be able to close out the week. I know I've been traveling and doing some stuff this week, so I'm glad to be able to close things out. I'm excited to be here all next week, and we got some excellent guests lined up. But for this Friday, I am so honored and so happy to be able to have my good friend and fellow activist and comrade, Ben Raymond, is joining us again from National Action. So, Ben, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I was actually just reading, speaking of your travels, about the anti-pederast picket that you had in Madisonville, Kentucky. I found that highly amusing, and I was really hoping you could just go straight in and talk about that.
Sure, sounds great. It was absolutely a great time. We found out right before it was actually going to happen, basically the morning of, so it was kind of last minute. And one of the great things of being an activist is, after doing this for so many years, I knew, all right, so there's going to be homosexuals and a drag show, transvestites, all of the degeneracy you can imagine. And I was like, I know I've got signs for this somewhere. So with a flashlight, I was in my basement, looking through boxes. And I was like, oh, no, this is my box of Third Reich flags. And then I eventually found them. And we had, from a previous demonstration that we did against the homos, we had signs. So that was pretty convenient. And we unveiled for the the audience our banner that actually kind of got an inspiration from you guys over in National Action. Where it says,
that's a very good banner.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, just being unequivocally about who we are, 100% socialist, 100% nationalist, 100% fighting for you. And it was an absolutely great time. I really enjoyed it. The homos got really upset, and there was this, Westboro Baptist Church style group that was next to us that began harassing us for being Nazis, harassing us for being socialists, harassing us, everything.
What was it exactly they said? Because I just couldn't believe that when I read it. The response to your banner, your banner did get a response. What was it exactly that the guy was screaming back at you?
Yeah, he was screaming that socialists go to hell, and that we're just as bad as the homos, and Nazis are all in hell, and we're going to go burn in hell with Hitler and all the other Nazis. And it was the worst stereotype. If you just imagine, your average American, if you were to, get him drunk on a bottle of whiskey and hit him in the head with a bat 3 or 4 times, it was absolutely the worst, stereotypical, retarded evangelical, and of course, once they started talking about Jews and all that stuff, we just absolutely ripped into them, and there was just this hilarious moment as we had just turned against them, and one of the drag queens was like, "Boys, we're up here." And we're like, and I was like, "I'll get to you in a second." So, it was great actually to be able to see, the conservatives, because the conservatives, Commander George Lincoln Rockwell, of course, said, a conservative wants to save his money, a national socialist wants to save his race. And that was on full display. These supposed conservatives that might think homosexuality is gross or whatever, they're just as opposed to the long-term health of our people, both spiritually, physically, culturally, if they view any form of nationalism or identity as being just as bad as the homos. So, it was a very clear thing because some of our guys that came out were new. It was one of their first public events, but our chapter there has been really investing in growing. To see that the conservatives, these, true conservatives, as they would call themselves, are just as much the enemy as the far left is. And, the funny thing is, then with the homos, they did the thing. They had kids with blow-up balloons pretending to fillet them and grinding on each other and all these things. And the this Westboro Baptist Church-style group, gets all, fake offended and you're all going to burn in hell. And they feed off that. But to have, this solid smirk of, you all are degenerates and this is gross and, reading off statistics about like homosexuality and AIDS and things like that, you know, not letting them get the bait of you being grossed out by them, but just calling them out for what they are. And, you know, one of our chants is, Reds and Homos, Tools of Soros. And, they really got mad at that to, you know, to explain that they are tools of the global establishment. They are tools of the global elite. And this one girl was wearing her socialist fist and, you know, we just called her out. You know, how can you, you know, you're here, and all of your nice cars, you're being supported. They actually had, banks like Chase Bank and stuff were like supporting the homo event. So like they're literally were wearing like anti-Wall Street stuff on their clothing and pro-homo stuff. But they're getting money from Wall Street and Wall Street supports their ideology. They're tools of the system. And that really, really confused them. And they, you know, they went from like yelling and heckling to like silently kind of standing around looking at each other, really confused. And that's the greatest reaction you can have because, you know, you've broken their brain. So, yeah, you know, it was an absolutely great time. And we got to troll both true conservatives and a bunch of, you know, pedophiles, degenerates and homos and drag queens. So I consider that a win. And the cops actually came up to us after the event. You know, white cops, of course, in rural Kentucky, and they shook our hands. And, you know, people were driving by, honking, giving us the thumbs up and stuff like that. So the everyday average person, you know, in Kentucky, even the law enforcement is supportive of our message, which was explicitly National Socialist, when opposed to the homos. So it's a great polarization technique. So, yeah, no, it was a great time. Anytime you can get the locals to support National Socialism and realize that is the only thing that will truly oppose the radical homosexual agenda, the radical globalist agenda, and these supposed churches and things like that are, you know, in the middle, which means they don't stand for anything. I think it's an absolutely great opportunity.
I mean, you had obviously that's an effective message, a fantastic example of that. And also this event, I mean, I really encourage everyone to go over and read over the article because there are so many other anecdotes there. But I mean, it's enormous fun. And if you have a bunch of new guys there, that's going to make them want to remain in this movement. Like, I think, you know, as opposed to quite a lot of other movements in the US, people who go to trad worker demonstrations seem to enjoy themselves a little bit too much.
Well, you know, I mean, it's a good problem to have, and it really builds that fraternity, you know, of getting, you know, especially the, you know, the new guys to be able to get them in and show them that this is fun. It's an enjoyable thing to take a stand for your people. And, you know, if you like trolling the enemy online, trolling them IRL is 10 times better, but then we actually get to make a difference. And you can see it when we had like moms with their children, because this was held in a park, who were just trying to take their kids like, to go on the swing set. And they're seeing these homosexuals literally filleting balloons and grinding on each other, coming up to us, again, as explicit National Socialists, and, like, shaking our hands and, like, hugging us and, you know, saying, well, I don't see the Republicans out here, and giving out literature to, like, soccer moms and blue-collar workers that were just there in the park trying to enjoy their local community on a Saturday. That polarization is great, and being able to see in the eyes of normal, everyday people that they've been waiting for us, that we're actually the vanguard of them, of everyday normal white people that are tired of this system that's been forced on them. So I think it's, you know, it's an absolutely great time that you have, you know, against the enemy, being with your comrades, but then seeing the impact it has on the local people, that's huge. That's absolutely huge, because it just shows that we are the normal ones, that it's these mentally ill degenerates, that are the freak show. We're the normal ones, and the only reason we don't have a million people marching with us simultaneously is we just haven't gotten our message out there yet to show the people that we're there, you know, we're the vanguard.
Fantastic. You wanted to talk a little bit about stickering today. I understand you've been in the news recently.
Oh, yes. Yeah, some of our local party members in Richmond, Virginia, you know, it's very sad, the former capital of the Confederacy, has been turned into this absolute third world hellhole. You know, they've got the gentrified white, you know, liberal hippie areas, and of course, just huge black problem with crime that's out of control. And even, you know, Confederate Avenue, there used to be an avenue of just statues to the Confederate heroes, again, former capital of the Confederacy. Now they're talking about tearing those down. They've already put up some non-Confederate statues. They've removed the flags from the Virginia military or the Virginia Fine Arts Museum that was gifted to them, and they've taken down the Confederate flags of the Soldiers' Chapel that is there. So they're doing everything they can to purge white identity, especially Southern white identity, from Richmond. So some of our local party comrades who are students at one of the universities in Richmond have been flyering and stickering left and right ever since school got back in. And it just hit the news this morning that the campus is absolutely losing its mind. They can't comprehend the idea of nationalism. And, you know, our stickers, you know, hashtag normal family of a white normal family, or stickers that say faith, family, and folk, you know, treadworker.org and things like that. They're absolutely losing their minds. And it's great because this is space, especially on the college campus that they're on, is it touts its diversity left and right. It touts its leftist credentials. So having students who are engaging them for this political space and claiming it as ours is a real challenge to their establishment. They might have a $100 million endowment. They might have all the academic pressures they can apply. But just a few kids with stickers is actually challenging them and making them lose their minds. And I know that's something that you guys over in the UK have been hugely involved in and been extremely successful with how you guys use your sticker campaigns.
I mean, yeah, we've been doing it for a very long time, and we started off in stickering universities, and that was basically some of the first coverage we actually got. But I mean, a sticker with basically the right message can go very, very far. There was, for instance, there was one last month. We had this one sticker that was put up in Leith, Scotland. I believe it's somewhere near Glasgow, right? And this thing went up on Twitter and got like 22,000 retweets, and the local leftist put on like 1,000-man march against this one sticker, like 1,000-man march, which, you know, was count, which we then counter demonstrate as well. But this is like the power that they have. If it's got the right message, then you're going to get a reaction. But I mean, it is about crafting, how you do your PR and stuff like that.
Well, exactly. It's about using the enemy's strength against them. I mean, you know, anyone who's read Sun Tzu, you know, in The Art of War, you know, you understand that if you know the enemy and you know yourself, you don't have to question the outcome of 1,000 battles. And I think that's incredibly true, that we as nationalists know our enemies even better than they know themselves. I mean, I was watching videos from a Trump protest they were holding. And of course, the media is out there just trying to ask people, you know, why are you opposing Trump? What are your positions? What do you believe in? And it just ends in like curse words and obscenity. And then just freaking out. There's no arguments or debate happening there. So, you know, that's an example. Once we know the enemy, and I think our movement, as we've grown in, you know, organizations like National Action or Trad Worker here in the United States, we know one another. We know our strengths, and we know how to be able to best utilize our resources. I think we've just proven, you know, almost down to a science, the best way to be able to get the most out of our you know, most bang for your buck, as the saying would go, you know, here in the United States, to be able to use our propaganda, to use our manpower and our talents, to be able to know how to provoke the enemy into the response that we want them to give. You know, every time the social justice warriors freak out, the far left freaks out. It's like Joshua Goldberg, who, of course, I think is a reprehensible human being, but he wrote an article about how SJWs are creating the next generation of fascists. Time the SJWs, he says in an article, every time the SJWs or the far left can prove themselves to the public that, you know, how insane they are, it grows the far right, as he calls it. And it's totally true. You know, the idea that when we can provoke them into the response we want them to give, it's the perfect thing, because it strengthens our position. It shows people, you know, and it alienates them away from the far left positions. And we grow in strength, and we control the dialogue. We control their actions, essentially, by knowing them better than they know themselves. So, I mean, is that something that you've seen, that we as a movement, you know, as nationalists, have really just kind of figured out how the best way to be able to handle outreach and activism and our street demos and stuff like that, to be able to really make them lose their minds effectively on the far left?
Well, I think it's something that the nationalist movement should have been doing for quite a long time before we came along. Because really, when we have such few resources, you have to seriously sit down and think and play to your strength. And what you were just describing, so I'm not sure if you've looked at the news cycle on this local thing, but if you're hitting universities, that may well enter local TV networks or whatever. But I mean, for such little resources, what does it stick across? Like, pennies on the dollar, or however it's cents on the dollar, however you want to say it, right? That's media you cannot buy that you're getting in return for that. And it's a kind of why worse is better. We've been stripped down. The right has been stripped down to the point it's at, that it's having a big comeback. And I think that almost beautifully dovetails onto our next subject, which is, of course, there's been a major benchmark for the alt-right with this Clinton speech. Now, this was like the announcement for this was covered in the previous Daily Traditionalist episode, and I encourage people to listen to that. But I the reaction from this, there's been really a lot of talk about, what exactly is the alt-right. So it's now been in the background. It's now been brought front and center. And the consensus seems to be, they say that it's like an unidentified decentralized movement, right? But this is my view, and I think it's not one that gets put out quite a lot, is that it's actually an incredibly centralized movement from what I've seen. Because, I mean, if you asked me a couple of years ago, it was quite a disparate group of ideologies. But, like, basically you had your neo-reactions, your Dark Enlightenment, your MGTOWs, your Arctos, your Matt Thornies, your Mike Cernoviches, your Colin Liddells, basically like every supreme gentleman LARPer. And in the last couple of years, they have been bully-sided out of the alt-right. I mean, the alt-right today is this. It's the right stuff, Daily Stormer access. So, they have their own circles. So people like organizations like you and me, we fit into certain ones or both, right? And anything that's kind of outside that, anything that doesn't make doesn't mesh with them, is not part of it. I think people make a little bit too much of this whole, like, the Milo types. They make a big issue out of the Milo issue. But from what I've seen, he's not someone who's actually, I mean, they're a different kettle of fish. They're people who are not interested in actually leading this movement, just simply taking advantage of the fact that it doesn't have a figurehead, because it's almost like an ideology. It's like a brand. But I mean, it's very consistent. I mean, for all practical purposes, it's fascist or national socialist ideologically, even if that's in all but name. But these outlets like Breitbart and Rebel Media, they come across as highly opportunistic. They see this enormous, troll army as something that, as a weapon they can use to smash the left. And they're at a point where they feel, okay, why are we still attacking the right when I'd rather deal with the social justice warriors? We had a very interesting program today on the BBC. They were covering the reaction to this whole Trump speech. Sorry, the Hillary speech, right? And it's a program called Trump's Shock Troops. And it was very white-pilling because for the first time, I think, ever, they're talking about national socialism. Like, they're bringing that up all the way through, anti-Semitism all the way through. They had Milo on, and he basically just explained that he was not a leader. He was just quite cynically using the movement, and all he cared about was that certain things would be achieved, and that it's now in the conclusion of the program was that it's now in ascendance. It's here to stay, and it's having major political, social clout. If we have a moment, if I want to talk about the Hillary speech. Do you want to interject with anything?
Yeah, just real quick. I think you're right. I mean, I think the real player is within the alt-right. It's kind of why I laughed a little bit when Yahoo News, their cover photo about the story in the alt-right, included a picture, you know, of me front and center, but then, like, Steve Bannon and Milo in the same picture, you know, with a swastika behind us and a Confederate flag in the same That's picture, fucking like awesome. Jared Taylor. you know, and Andrew Anglin. Like, it was a very interesting photo for them to pick, and I think it just goes to show that the media doesn't really know what the alt-right is, and the media is just kind of throwing things together. But yeah, no, I think it basically, in the United States, it comes down to TRS and Daily Stormer. You know, Breitbart, they might be somewhat kind of moving in this direction, but I agree with you. I think they're opportunistic.
Well, they're definitely moving in the direction, because obviously, like, they started out quite as a philo-Semitic, like, anti-Islam type blog. And obviously, since the Never Trump thing happened, every Jew left the newspaper. So, you know, that was obvious.
Yeah, it just naturally kind of, I mean, as soon as Jews are removed, it's like the clouds part and the sun comes through and, you know, children are singing and, you know, everything just kind of naturally sorts itself out. But, I mean, the thing with them, you know, or Milo, you know, any movement that Milo Yiannopoulos could be a part of, I would not want to be a part of. You know, a homosexual Jew that loves interracial gangbangs and things like that. I mean, not to be crude, you know, I try and keep it a family-friendly show, but I mean, that level of degeneracy, he should never be allowed to speak for white interests, because he isn't one of us in any way, shape, or form. His worldview and his lifestyle, even if he was European, has nothing to do with us. But you know, he is part of this reaction to leftist policies. You know, if he wants to be able to continue having his lifestyle, having the West, you know, swamped with Muslims will probably make that difficult, because they don't have the same, you know, white guilt that we do to accept all these leftist policies. So he's kind of a weird one, but he's definitely not part of our movement, you know, as we should define it. So I see nationalism, you know, the alt-right is kind of a broad thing, but the true alt-right really is, you know, national socialist in character, or fascistic, or, I mean, something along that line, and it has to be ethno-nationalist. That's the true alt-right, but there's a lot of people that are kind of coming to the brand without coming to the full ideology, and then they're kind of put forward, you know, by the media that either doesn't care about the truth or is just kind of throwing things against the wall, you know what I mean, to push their agenda. You know, as Andrew Anglin on the Daily Stormers pointed out, they're trying to prop up people like Milo, who don't represent us, and who say our views on Jews or homosexuality and things like that is just all a joke and a troll. And like, no, we actually believe this, you know, so the media definitely has a point to try and push people who aren't actually truly alt-right, you know, as we might determine it, as being supposedly our spokespeople.
I mean, I think that's kind of like the gambit, or you call that basically a microcosm of the entire Trump phenomenon, is that he himself is moderate, but he dog whistles. And I mean, in the case of, I would say, like, basically you've got two, like, spheres to alt-right. So we've got true alt-right, as we know it, as an organization. It's got a consistent message. It's consistent ideology, from what I can see. But the gambit is that it is undefinable, because it has no real, like, central leader, no central figurehead. It's kind of a self-conscious movement. So people insert themselves in as surrogates, but I don't see a problem with that. I mean, it's helpful in a way, because you have the deniability. The thing about this speech is Hillary Clinton looks like a crazy conspiracy theorist. For the last 10 years, you have all these Democrats ridiculing people like Glenn Beck for doing exactly this, but, you know, the other way around. Basically, I mean, people were quite blackpilled of like, oh no, how is Trump going to respond to this? There's no way he can't respond to this with anything other than ridicule. In fact, she'll probably force him to become hard in his position. I think the only concern that's been floated out is that this is actually a prelude to no platform, because I was listening to this talk and I thought, oh my God, if she ever debates him, it's over. She's going to be slaughtered on stage in front of everyone. They're obviously, candidates are not like bound to actually have a debate. There's Have you thought anything about the possibility they may not have the debates? Because then she'd stand a good chance of winning.
Well, I actually have heard people on social media discussing that. And that's a very important thing, you know, from like the anti-fascist perspective. Because I read a lot of their stuff, you know, and how they refer to us. The entire anti-fascist worldview for, I mean, 2 decades now, really, and even longer in some cases, has just been no platform. Because they realize they can't debate any nationalist position, that everything they have are these vague appeals to emotions and feeling good when we've got cold, hard facts. So I totally agree with you. What would happen in a debate is Trump would just absolutely crucify her in front of the entire world. And the debates have a huge impact. I mean, in American history, you know, going back to Kennedy versus Nixon, you know, Kennedy won the election. Many people say because of the debate, because he performed better, he looked better, in better health, more vibrant, and, you know, people voted for him. And I think Donald Trump, when compared next to Hillary Clinton, just his bombastic style, his confidence, and then, of course, his better policy positions would absolutely just blow her out of the water. So when you look at the organized anti-fascist community against nationalists, their entire thing is no platform, because they, if they debate us, they lose every single time. Every time they get up there and try and have a debate, they absolutely lose. They make fools of themselves. They alienate their supporters, and we gain the high ground. So I actually have heard people discussing that she, you know, no one should talk with a demagogue like Donald Trump and things like that. So if she were to do that, I honestly think I mean she'd get crucified for it on conservative media, but the regular media would say, well, it's great not to give fascism and hate and all that stuff a platform. So, and that kind of dovetails with her ad she released yesterday, where it's literally interviewing like some random Klansman. And I've been in this movement a long time. I know a lot of people, and like that guy, whoever was in the video, I looked at that and I was like, I have no idea who that is. So they just like picked a random
what you doing,
Klansman
Rabbi?
Somewhere to be like, say what?
I said, what you doing, Rabbi?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Some just like random Klansman to be like, ah, I like a lot of Donald Trump policy positions, and it's like Donald Trump is a Klansman. So that would actually kind of go with the idea of no platform, of saying like if her new line is like Donald Trump is literally part of the invisible empire, then that would kind of work together to try and deny him a platform. But that would be unprecedented in American political history. But this is a crazy election, so I guess we're going to have to see. But, I mean, you know, I never once thought with all the ads that be coming out that people, you know, on the internet, you know, everyone calls everyone Hitler and stuff like that against conservatives. But you've got the Democratic nominee literally calling Donald Trump like a Klansman. So that's, who knows, it's 2016. This current year is one heck of a current year.
I'm just going to leave one other thing on that. That was... you know, your friend Matt Parrott was actually right in his prediction about the her moving to the center, because in this speech she praises George W. Bush and says, "Why can't we have a leader like that?" I mean, that which is stunning, really. I think for a Democratic nominee. I don't know if there's much more to say on that, but talk about trying to appeal to the center ground. But really, how much of this center ground is there? Because I don't think neoconservatism was like really a mass movement, if I'm going to be entirely honest. And that's another thing about people kvetching about Donald Trump disavowing the alt-right. I don't think he ever disavowed neoconservatism. And that's like an actual movement with ideologues and figureheads and whatever, like. You know, just chill out, guys. Let's just see how this thing goes, yeah?
Well, exactly. I mean, and again, Donald Trump is not one of us. So it's kind of that deniability. I love what he's doing. Let him keep going. And if he, you know, if something down the road doesn't pan out, well, we're still building our movement. We're growing. So that's great. You know, it's a win-win. We should all be wearing party hats. we shouldn't, you know, we should never get doom and gloom about things because our movement is on the rise. But yeah, I mean, the neoconservative thing, I mean, the problem is neoconservatism can only rally like normal everyday American, you know, white Americans like Donald Trump has, like in the George W. Bush style, where it was like, you know, Toby Keith, you know, we're going to put a boot in your ass to the world. And like, it was strong and masculine. And the only way to really make it work was through like a George W. Bush, who was like this folksy beer drinking, like guy who cuts brush on his ranch, like a Ronald Reagan style. Of course, that was all a sham. That wasn't real, but that was the image that was presented. And it was just like, we're going to be tough and we're just going to go, you know, we're going to beat some skulls in for America. That like strength position, you know, can really figure, you know, make things work with like your average everyday white American. But they don't have another George W. Bush. They've got like a Jeb Bush now where it's like, you know, come on, guys, we gotta go serve Israel. We gotta go do this. And it's just weak. And that weakness isn't a leader. And the neocons, I think, have pretty much just run out of gas intellectually, politically, and all this other ways. So the Donald Trump revolution is continuing. And it's not even about Donald Trump at this point. It's the point that our ideas, I mean, we had the Democratic nominee say white genocide on national television. And, you know, you just look at the Google searches for the term white genocide, skyrocketed yesterday and things like that. So who knows how many potentially millions of people are finding our ideas for the first time. And now it's our business, you know, you and I, Ben, and so many other great people, to be able to organize and mobilize these newly awakened folks and then get them involved in our communities and get some stuff done. So it's a great time to be a nationalist. You know, I hear, you know, guys who are black-pilled and stuff all the time who get depressed, but we should be excited. We should be happy. Are rolling in our direction. So victory for all, basically. And I know we're running out of time, but let's give a final thought. And you're also doing some work in some podcasts, right? So where can folks see more of your work?
Yeah, there's nothing confirmed on that. I just dovetail off on one thing you said, and that was that, you know, yes, Donald Trump is not our guy, but if there's any reason you should be hoping that he wins, it's the fact that for whatever reason, alt-right has been put up front and center. They say this is a national socialist movement. Our cards, the chips are on the table. If he wins an election and he wins it with quote-unquote us, whether that was ever the case or not, people will take people like us seriously.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. This is our time, and it's time for us to be able to make the most out of it. And to be able to grow our movement and show that normal people, when given the choice between globalism, multiculturalism, liberalism, versus nationalism, identity, and real nations, they choose our position every time. So our message is getting out there like never before. Let's continue the revolution. So Ben Raymond, thank you so much, as always, for being here. It was absolutely a pleasure. Great conversation. Thank you to all my listeners. Glad to be back. And I'll be back on Monday with Dr. Matt Johnson. So have a great weekend. Go out and do some activism. And I'll see y'all on the other side of this weekend. Have a great one. Hail victory.
You've been tuned into The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heimbach at Radio Area. .com